I am examining the possible consequences, both of rejecting and accepting the creation of the Adeptus Mechanicus. I know you are too.
I am convinced that not forming an Adeptus will lead to catastrophe. It is the only way of resolving the binary succession. The Mechanicum cannot have two leaders.
Malkador nodded.
There is more that I hope you understand. You did not achieve your ends in the Council today, but your words themselves were a statement. Events are unfolding now because of that. You may believe that Master Pentasian and Grand Marshal Rantal were reacting from their own petty considerations, and true enough, pure political instinct may have been part of it. But let me assure you, Ambassador Vetheral, the High Lords are not only political animals. They believe in the Imperium. They would lay down their lives in its defense. Their objections to the Adeptus Mechanicus are important. They call this a power grab. That is what the Council perceives as a real possibility, a real threat. Whatever your motivations, the creation of this Adeptus would greatly alter the balance of power on Terra.
The power of the Mechanicum, even divided, exists whether the Adeptus does or not. There is more than one possible solution to the equation. The Council cannot afford the wrong sort of Martian unity.
The Sigilite gave Vetheral a long look, gripping his staff tightly.
I should wonder what you mean by that. There is power, too, in what you unleashed today.
The Fabricator General and I never believed that things would be otherwise.
I thought so. I am glad to know I was right. But we must all deal with those consequences now. The situation with the Mechanicum and Mars is already uncertain. Your loyalties were questioned before. Now they are subject to outright suspicion.
There would be plenty of suspicion on all sides in the days ahead, she knew. She also knew that Kane would be at the center of that particular storm.
All of what you say is true, Lord Regent. But this motion must be approved.
Perhaps. May we all make the correct decisions, then. I bid you well, Ambassador Vetheral.
He trudged away, his frail figure disappearing into the shadows between the columns. Vetheral stood a while longer in quiet contemplation. Yes, she had known how their actions would appear to the High Lords. She also knew how they would likely appear to the other loyalists within the Mechanicum. She had always expected the first step to be unsuccessful, but despite her realism, she found herself wishing that she had made even a hint of progress with the Council. Then Zagreus Kane would have something to use in the trials that awaited him, even if that was nothing more concrete than Vetheral's own flawed hope. When the hour approached for Mars to rise, Vetheral arrived on the Stellarum Vigil ramparts early. She stood at the center of their span, her back to the parapet, facing the robed celebrants. They would have questions. They would have accusations. She wanted them to know that she was here to answer them. All eyes, organic and bionic, were upon her. The moment of the ritual drew closer, when silence must prevail. But silence was there already. The adepts of the Mechanicum filled the ramparts, their ambassador at their center, and no word was spoken. There was not even the briefest burst of binaric. There was no communication at all. Vetheral glanced about nervously. The unsaid, the surmised, these things built tension. She waited until the last second before she resigned herself and turned to watch the sky. Looking up and down the ramparts, she saw, at some distance to her right, that a number of Titan princeps and moderati had joined the observance for the first time. Mars rose, and the ceremony began. The shared act of contemplation and mourning took place as it had countless times before. Betheril gazed up at the red glimmer on the horizon. She grieved for her sacred homeworld, but her attention was drifting. Tonight, the sight of Mars was less a reminder of what had been lost, and more a sign of the conflicts that the schism had engendered here on Terra. All worshippers of the Omnissiah on the Stellarum Vigil were exiles because they were loyal to the Emperor as well as to Mars. Taemon Verticorda himself had shown that there was no contradiction between those loyalties. They were the same, because the Emperor was the living avatar of the Omnissiah. Time passed. Mars reached its zenith, then began its descent. The closer the moment came to the extinguishing of the red spark, the more smothering the silence became. The end of the ritual was the signal as Mars vanished behind the jagged horizon of palace spires, and the silence at last was broken. Betheril lowered her eyes and found Magos Garantor standing beside her.
What have you done? Your actions have undermined the Treaty of Olympus. The word of the Omnissiah has been disobeyed.
You are wrong to think so little of my faith, Magos.
How can we think otherwise? You propose to formalize Terra's control of the priesthood. We will be slaves, and Mars will be forgotten.
That is not the purpose of what I have proposed. This is only intended to...
Betheril realized then that the Tech priests would not believe the situation was temporary any more than Rantel and Pentasian did. Instead, she returned to the real issue.
An Adeptus Mechanicus would be in a position to force the Council to listen to Martian concerns.
As much as it listens to you now.
The Council looks at us and perceives refugees. The accuracy of that impression is irrelevant. What matters is...
She looked beyond Garantor to see the crowd that had grown around them. Glowing multi-optics narrowed their focus on her. There was metallic shifting from all sides. Betheril was acutely aware that her lack of visible machinic alterations counted against her. To those who believed that she had spoken against the treaty and the Mechanicum today, the implication of her very human appearance was gaining far too much significance.
For the sake of Mars and the Imperium, the Adeptus Mechanicus must become a reality. In the name of the Omnissiah, I pray that all of you will see the necessity of this.
Garantor put out his machine arm to grip her robe.
We will be slaves!
Unhand me, Magos Garantor. If you wish to turn this into a circular argument, then you may do so without my help. It is clear that nothing I say will convince you that my actions are the full expression of my devotion to the Omnissiah and the will of the Fabricator General of the Mechanicum. Believe otherwise, if you will. But the Adeptus Mechanicus must become a reality. And I will fight to see it happen.
She moved away, and the other Tech priests parted to let her pass. Murmurs of Gothic and hissing bursts of binaric cant surrounded her. She was done with the debate for now, but it was alive and burning in the crowd. Good. The matter was out in the open and contentious. By the next session of the council, her popular support might well have grown. She was midway across the width of the parapet when Garantor replied,
"No!"
Betheril turned. He stood where she had left him, staring at the ambassador down the length of the widening gap in the crowd.
What do you mean, no? You forget yourself, Magos.
No. We cannot let you dishonor the treaty. We cannot let you crush the Mechanicum and the independence of Mars.
She sensed movement at her rear. She whirled round to find Passax blocking her path. The Magos' metal limbs reached for Betheril, saws spinning and plasma cutters ignited. Betheril jerked back, but one of the mechadendrites wrapped around her left arm and held tight.
I will come for you.
I know.
This was not the same treachery that had torn Mars apart. Geraint Torn Passax believed, truly, truly believed, that Vetheril was the traitor, that she was the heretic. Despair gripped her heart, but she could not give in. She carried no weapon, but the ambassador was not helpless. She channeled the energy coursing through her hidden subcutaneous electrodes, and in a fraction of a second, a massive charge of biological and mechanical electricity built in her captive arm. She sent the burst through Passax's mechadendrite. It overloaded the circuits and the limb spasmed. Vetheril pulled free, jumping back. There was rapid movement to her left and right. Alarm spread through the gathered adepts. Some began to move to her aid, but many others retreated, confused about where the truth of Martian loyalty lay. Geraint Torn remained where he was, a witness of the execution he had arranged, content to let other hands perform the deed. An adept grabbed Passax's right arm. The Magos' telescoping digits twisted back and slashed at Vetheril's would-be savior with a plasma torch, driving him back. Before anyone else could reach the ambassador, there was a concerted push from within the crowd, and three electro-priests rushed her. They had thrown back their robes in full combat fury. Their faces were twisted into masks of hatred. They had not come to the Stellarum Vigil to mourn, but to murder. They brandished electro-leech staves. Vetheril ducked and threw herself to the side, passing under one priest's swing, but she caught a glancing blow from the sparking capacitor of another. Though the contact was brief, she felt a sudden drain of her motive force. Her limbs became sluggish, her body twitched. Her electus began to go dark, diminishing her awareness and control of her being. She stumbled into a crowd that now recoiled from her. The attack of the electro-priests was too ferocious and coordinated. For the other adepts, this poor, defenseless ambassador's death now seemed a certainty. And they would not throw themselves into a conflict that was already decided. If she was doomed to fall, then surely the Omnissiah had found her wanting, and her heresy was all but confirmed. The attack had machinic precision. Vetheril moved now with a weakness of unaugmented flesh, and the electro-priests surrounded her, crying out in their exquisite mania. A staff's capacitor caught her in the ribs, spreading a cold darkness through her torso and into her extremities. It felt like shutting down, like she was being disconnected in the most primal, absolute fashion. She fell to her knees. She barely managed to raise her head and saw Geraint Torn finally striding towards her. The human half of his face was as impassive as the metallic one. There was no sign of pleasure or even satisfaction in his expression. He was a faithful servant, driven by what he saw as a grim duty.
Zagreus Kane is not worthy to be our Fabricator General. In executing this puppet emissary, we reject his Terran-given authority. We act now for the salvation of the...
A las blast caught him in the head, silencing him. It scorched a trench through the metal of his skull, which sparked and smoked as he wheeled away from Vetheril. More las stitched a crossfire above her, striking the electro-priests and Magos Passax too, pattering from her thick armor plates. Vetheril dragged herself forwards. The rest of the adepts were fleeing from the conflict, not even wishing to witness the outcome. She found the strength to rise to her feet. There were other assassins in the crowd, a second wave that now tried to join the first, but found themselves under attack. Not from loyal Mechanicum protectors, but the uniformed officers of the Collegia Titanica. There were four princeps, each flanked by two moderati wielding las carbines. The groups came into the crowd from two different directions, their attacks well-ordered and implacable. They fought here as they did when they controlled their battle titans. In her delirium, Vetheril fancied she could almost see the spirits of the god machines towering over them. Phantasmic auras walking to crush a new insurrection. In the growing chaos of the struggle on the ramparts, Passax closed with Vetheril again, a voice, now a machine, snarl.
The Mechanicum will be preserved!
She seized Vethra with both of her massive arms, mechadendrites lashing around the ambassador's neck and chest. She couldn't move. Vethra had told Malkador that she and Kane were prepared for the consequences of her actions in the council. These were the consequences. Her death would only be the first. Hasax snapped out a tool appendage from between her shoulders. Its tip was an adamantine drill. The bit spun before Vethra's eyes with murderous intent. Plasma blasts struck Hasax in her armored flanks and back. Her voice box let out a sickening electronic squeal. Flames burst from her thorax and her hands spasmed open. Vethra dropped heavily to the ground while the dying Magos slumped in on herself. She did not fall. Instead, she became a heap of smoldering metal. Smoke enveloped the broken shape, her limbs folded together as if in prayer. Vethra managed to stand, and so she was upright when the princeps reached her. Bassanius and Tevera stood with their plasma pistols ready, close enough to support her if she stumbled, but keeping a respectful distance.
I am in your debt. So is Mars.
Her soul felt more drained than her body. The adepts of the Mechanicum had drawn each other's blood again. The priests who lay dead had believed in the righteousness of their actions. Now even the faithful had turned upon each other. This had to stop. By the Omnissiah, this had to stop. Princeps Tevera helped her forwards. Bassanius of Ignatum looked as sick at heart as Vethra felt.
There is no debt here. We did what had to be done.
Just as you have of late, Ambassador.
Vethra glanced at the bodies littering the Stellarum Vigil and cursed the brutal costs of her recent decisions.
You agree with my proposition, then?
Yes. After hearing you plead your case, and after giving it due thought. There are risks for the independence of Mars, true, but if there is no Imperium left to speak of, what then?
Bring your proposition before the Council again. It will pass this time. We will ensure that it does.
Passing it will involve more conflict, more loyal bloodshed.
We know. You did not have the leverage you needed at the council today. Now you will have it.
Vethra shook her head.
The High Lords will veto any action they deem to be premature. The Imperium is at war. They have that power.
They cannot veto the Titan Legions. We have no voice in the chamber.
Then you understand how far we might have to go. You understand the lines we may have to cross to secure Mars's future.
Tevera nodded.
We do.
Then that is well.
The words were a lie. Nothing was well, especially not what she guessed the three of them were about to do. All of the gathered princeps were present at the next session of the council, except for Bassanius, who had other matters to attend. They sat in a long row in one of the lowest tiers with Vethra, by special arrangement of Fabricator General Kane. They watched in silence, as still as if they were standing at attention, while the council circled laboriously towards the consideration of their fate. Harantal condemned the battle on the Stellarum Vigil.
While the attempt on Ambassador Vethral's life was a despicable and cowardly act, it is apparent that the exiles from Mars have brought their internal conflict with them inside the walls of the Imperial Palace itself. This is beyond unacceptable.
Our internal conflict.
Wasn't that your civil war being fought last night?
If you truly think the war is only Martian, then your ignorance is the true danger to Terra.
There were murmurs and snickers from the assembled delegates. Even Simeon Pentasian smiled wryly as Randhal sank back into his chair.
This is a distraction. What must be decided is the disposition of the Collegia Titanica forces.
And who will decide that? The Honorable High Lords of Terra? By what right and under what authority? Under the provisions of the Treaty of Olympus, the Titan Legions have never acted under orders from this council, but voluntarily acceded to its many requests. If the Council of Terra will not give Mars the right to decide its own destiny, how long do you think Terra can stand against the War Master without the Mechanicum's assistance? And how long will you be allowed to behave as if you command the mighty Titans yourselves?
Your implied threats do your cause no good. Furthermore, they ignore the realities of our situation. Mars has no voice here because Mars belongs to the traitors.
There was uproar in the tiers of the chamber. Tevera and Betheril exchanged a weary glance. Pentasian rose from his seat.
Once more, we are losing ourselves in recriminations and insults, rather than acting for the good of the Imperium. There is one point upon which I will agree with Ambassador Vetherell. The current situation regarding the chain of command is not tenable.
Rantel was startled.
Surely you don't seek to endorse the creation of their new adeptus?
Absolutely not. Given that Mars is currently lost to us, I believe we must all accept the fact that the treaty signed between Terra and the Mechanicum cannot be held valid. All of its provisions are nullified. We must act to formalize a new accord and a central authority. Yes, the Collegia Titanica needs a clear chain of command. And that chain should begin here, in the Council of Terra.
No! You cannot dictate that!
Betheril had had enough. She had made one last effort to reason with the Council, but it was pointless. Pentasian and Rantal were lining up to pick over the carcass of the Mechanicum before it was even dead, and the other High Lords were following their lead. She looked to Tevera again and nodded. It was time. Rantal sat up straighter, relishing the meal he imagined was to come.
Ambassador Vetherell, as representative of the Mechanicum Adepts present on Terra, you will...
The doors to the chamber flew open. His treads grinding against the polished marble floor, Zagreus Kane entered the political arena. His arms were folded, their mechanical hands held open. He had come without weapons, as was the law, yet his very being was the embodiment of machinic force. His existence was a threat, and Vetheril saw with even greater clarity why he had chosen not to be part of the deliberations until now. His mere presence precipitated crisis. The Collegia Titanica representatives stood as one. Vetheril watched the jolt of realization hit the chamber, the High Lords at the debating table in particular. They were suddenly aware there was a concerted military force in the midst of their council session. Unarmed, but still intimidating. At the head of the table, Malkador the Sigilite clambered painfully to his feet and planted his staff squarely on the floor. He called out to Kane as his clanking form reached the dais.
Think very carefully about your next actions, Zagreus.
I am taking none.
The Fabricator General did not mount the platform. He remained where he was, observer and observed. Tevera turned in her exoskeletal frame to address the tiers above them.
I am Warmonger Princeps Tevera of the Legio Agraveades. We have come to be heard. So hear our voices now, and take heed. If the formation of the Adeptus Mechanicus is not approved in this session, then the Collegia Titanica will know where it stands, and we will no longer be the puppets of the Council of Terra. To your eternal shame, you have abandoned sacred Mars, home world of my Legio. Now, you demand that my comrades forsake their worlds too, to burn undefended beneath the assaults of the traitors. If there is no Adeptus for Mars, there will be no Titans for the throne world. We will abandon the Solar War and return to our own fiefdoms immediately.
The chamber erupted in roars of outrage and condemnation. Council members and observers alike shouted over each other. The noise washed over Vethero. She and Cain and the Princeps stood in silence, unmoving rocks in the sea of anger. You have heard us now, Vethero thought, but will you listen? She guessed not. Harantar leapt to his feet. He did not seem so comfortable in confronting the imposing form of the Fabricator General at the edge of the dais, and so he pointed an accusing finger at Vethero instead.
This is who you are! This is treachery! A coup! I will see you executed for this!
This is no coup! It is the resolution of an equation! We understand the necessity of an Adeptus Mechanicus. If you do not, then you must be shown it in terms you can comprehend. The binary succession must be ended!
Oh, I tire of this.
Rantal turned to his fellow High Lords.
Let me call in the arbitrators. I will have the Martians arrested and tried for their crimes against the throne.
The uproar grew louder. Most of the voices cried their approval, but others urged caution, leniency, time to consider all options. They were the ones who saw the line that was about to be crossed. The loyal leader of the Cult Mechanicum and many senior princeps of the Collegia Titanica, in chains, will be a disaster for Imperial morale across the galaxy. At last, Vethrol knew, some of them were beginning to see the danger, but not enough. And now it was too late. A deep, reverberating impact shook the floor of the chamber, swaying the long lumen sconces hanging from the dome high above. Vethrol and the Titan officers noted it well, but did not react. Another impact, stronger this time, strong enough to be felt in the shudder of the walls. The council delegates in the upper tiers began to glance around at one another in confusion, even as a further tremor shook masonry dust from the ceiling. Then, Mars's greatest voice was heard on Terra. The blast of the warhorn cut through the din of the chamber, and all who heard it fell silent. The sound came from far away, but it rattled the dome all the same. The bellow was deep yet piercing, redolent of the greatest majesty of war. Another tremor followed it a few moments later. They were drawing nearer. Pentasian's eyes grew wide.
What is happening, Ambassador?
The Imperator Magnificum Incendius of the Legio Ignatum walks towards us.
Vethero's words were a simple statement of fact. Their implication, though, was enormous. Rantal stared at her in horror. The war horn sounded again, louder, nearer, and a moment of shocked quiet descended over the chamber. Thousands were holding their breath at once, listening to the approach of the God Machine. One of the most colossal engines of war ever built walked with ominous purpose towards the political heart of the Imperium. It had stepped over the defenses wrought to protect the master of mankind as if they were not there, and now strode down the wide avenues of the outer palace, driving crowds of fleeing citizens before it. Its huge weapon arms cycled up, rotary barrels the length of maglev trains, plasma accelerators that could drive a starship. The Titan's roar was so loud, it seemed as though that alone could bring the palace tumbling down. Emplacement guns were brought awkwardly to bear, having only been intended to fire outwards from the walls. The Custodian Guard and Imperial Auxilia garrisons tried to outflank it, but this was just one single engine of the Collegia Titanica, and there was currently nothing within 100 kilometers that could halt its relentless advance. Panic took hold of the council chamber. There were no windows, no one could see what was coming, yet the sound was enough. Everyone present knew of a holocaust that an Imperator Titan could unleash upon its foes. Its voice was a howl to shatter the heavens. The end was coming. There was no escape and no recourse. Pentasian scrambled towards Vetheril.
Stop this! You are commanded to stop!
Vetheril stood her ground.
Who commands us?
She timed her words to come between the blasts of the warhorn. The beat of the Titan's steps were the rhythm of approaching doom.
Who commands the Mechanicum? Who commands the Titans? The binary succession is the product both of poor Martian logic and frightful Terran ignorance. And it may prove the doom of us all.
Bethel looked at Malkador. The Sigilite was watching her steadily. His face was shadowed, expressionless. He said nothing. He was letting the situation play itself out. Was he so confident there were lines that the Mechanicum and the Collegia Titanica would not cross, Vetheril wondered? Or had they already been left far behind? The Ambassador and the Princeps had committed themselves irrevocably. The consequences of this day would be unavoidable. She felt the Sigilite judging her, waiting to see if, once and for all, she was prepared for what she had set in motion. Or maybe you approve, Vetheril thought. Maybe you want this too. The blast of the horn overwhelmed the screams in the chamber. People were scrambling over each other to reach the exits from the tiers, fleeing what could not be escaped. But the sound froze them in mid-flight. It was so close it seemed to come from inside the dome and all around them, all at once. In the moment of silence that followed, Bethel spoke again.
The binary succession must be resolved. The Adeptus Mechanicus is the resolution. There can only be zero or one. There cannot be both. Otherwise, there is uncertainty. With uncertainty, can there ever truly be loyalty?
She paused.
And if there is no loyalty...
The Titan's battle cry came one last time. One more step, and it seemed as though Magnificum Incendius would crush the dome beneath its immense armored foot. Rantel threw up his hands.
Enough!
He stumbled back to the table and sank down into his chair.
Enough!
The other High Lords, some of them partway towards the chamber exits, nodded their agreement, looking shrunken and small beside the other men and women of the council. Bethel nodded to Tevera, who spoke into her Vox
speed. Princeps Pisanius, stand
down. Magnificum Incendius halted. The tremors ceased. Even so, Pentasian looked up as if he could see the shadow of the Imperator pressing against the exterior walls of the chamber. His face was ashen.
We concur with Ambassador Vetheril. There will be an Adeptus Mechanicus to resolve the specific conflicts of succession within the Martian contingent on Terra.
Malkador spoke then. His tone was hard, unbowed.
And what does the Mechanicum propose in return? Tell me, Ambassador, do you expect the Council to be held hostage indefinitely? The Adeptus Mechanicus will be a voice on the Council, but it cannot be the only voice.
Agreed. This must never be allowed to happen again.
Ramtal was not posturing. He had reached his limit. Betheril could hear his conviction and his determination. If she pushed him any further, his duty as commander at the Arbitrators would force him to push back. Then the nightmare would truly be unleashed. Malkador nodded slowly, rapping his staff on the marble floor of the dais.
There will be conditions. If Fabricator General Zagreus Kane is now to ascend to the ranks of the High Lords, he must permit us some concessions as a gesture of good faith. But we will discuss such things only when the officers of the Titan Legions remove themselves from this chamber.
This was the price that had to be paid. Kane had to restore trust, and Vetheril's boldness had ensured that the price of that trust would likely be high indeed. Vetheril met with Bassanius and Tevera at the feet of Magnificum Incendius. The Imperator had halted its march barely 100 yards from the walls of the Great Chamber. It stood in the center of the mile-wide avenue of the Imperial Awakening. Its banners flapped in the strong wind. Low clouds tore themselves across the peak of its battlements. The god machine faced towards the chamber. A sentinel once more, but a fearsome one. The thronging crowd in the avenue gave the Titan a wide berth, while Ignatum protector squads stood guard around the bastion-like entrances to its lower legs. At the same time, the adepts and officials of the palace slowed and gazed upwards at the engine, mesmerized by the source of their recent terror. Bassanius stood with a proprietorial pride before the god machine, with Tevera beside him.
Is this what you hope to achieve, Ambassador?
The Adeptus Mechanicus is becoming a reality, and so is the Adeptus Titanicus. Mars has been promised to us all once more, in exchange for our full-hearted compliance in the defense of Terra now.
But the Titan Legion still have no voice of their own. We are enthralled. To Zagreus Kane and the alliances he forms for his own purposes.
No. You will have agency through Zagreus Kane. He honors all of the ancient oaths, the old bonds between the priesthood and the loyal commanders of the god machines, and he insists that you be recognized by Terra. This is the oldest alliance, renewed at the Imperium's greatest time of need, and named Adeptus.
Betheril gestured to the Great Chamber.
The Council decrees that the Legios must act in defense of the Segmentum Solar, and so they shall. But the nature of the deployment will be under the authority of the Fabricator General. In exchange for this service, he will ensure that the Lesser Forge worlds do not remain undefended. They will be protected and fortified by the Adeptus Mechanicus while the Titans march to war.
And what of the Treaty of Olympus? Is it dead?
The treaty...
She stopped, looking off into the direction of the Stellarum Vigil, thinking about the much-needed glimpse of their lost homeworld that she would have in a few hours' time.
The treaty remains in place, though Mars itself does not observe it. I have faith in the Omnissiah, and that we loyal few will take back the Red Planet when the time is right. For now, though, the home of the Adeptus Mechanicus is on Terra.
But what does that mean for us?
It means that the chain of command in the conduct of this war will have a clear order. Neither Mechanicus nor Titanicus can hope to shape the Council's decisions, then ignore them whenever they choose. The decisions we will help to inform are also the ones by which we must abide. It is not the perfect outcome, but I believe it is the best that could be obtained.
The two princeps exchanged a look. Then Tevera turned back to Vetheril.
So, this is our victory.
A victory? Against whom? There will be no victory until Horus is defeated.
She thought about what had already been lost, what had already been destroyed.
I don't think the Imperium will ever have a triumphant victory again. Those days are behind us.
So we gain influence and lose our autonomy. And for what?
The gain is greater than the loss. I do believe this. The binary succession is ended. There is only the Adeptus Mechanicus now. Not temporary, but permanent. There shall only ever be but one Fabricator General. And all loyal children of Mars who would hold true to their faith must follow his command. For the good of all mankind.
Betheril looked up at the Imperator. It had halted only a step or two from catastrophe. Just as on the Stellarum Vigil, she had been one unlucky blow away from death and failure. The way forwards was narrow and shadowed, but they were all embarked upon it now. There was only one path, and it led through the furnace of war.
The Heart of the Pharos by L.J. Goulding. Performed by Gareth Armstrong, John Banks, Jim Barkley, Ophir Burton, Cliff Chapman, and Steve Conlin.
He fell, my lord. Of that much, at least, we can be certain.
Captain Adalus's words rang with an echo that did not entirely match the physical confines of the chamber in which he stood. The effect was apparently disorienting, even for those who had used the Pharos many times before, making the smooth, polished walls appear shadowy and indistinct. Beyond them, through them, the high pillars of the Convincus Cubicularum were clearly visible many light years away on Macragge. He blinked hard, trying his best to focus on the matter at hand.
I can find no evidence to suggest that anything unusual occurred in the initial stages of the descent. It seems that the correct procedures were followed throughout.
Adalus stood at the center of the tuning stage in primary location Alpha, scanning the information on the data slate in his hands, as though it were all new to him. In truth, he had read it more than a dozen times. They all had. Behind his iron mask, Warsmith Dantioch sighed.
The sergeant's report is comprehensive in detail, Captain Adalus, and yet it offers little in the way of any real insight. I, for one, am still no closer to understanding what actually happened to young Obadiah. That, if nothing else, is a problem.
Quite so.
Four of them were haloed within the communication field there on Sotha. Three were Centurion-level officers from three different legions, a living testament to the ideals of Imperium Secundus. They stood as equals, Adalus of the Ultramarines, Barabbas Dantioch of the Iron Warriors, and Alexis Pollux of the Imperial Fists. A giant in his yellow battleplate, he remained always at the periphery, quietly tending to the esoteric functions of the Pharos, and noting each minute change in the polarity readings as his kinsman spoke. Adalus beckoned to the fourth of their number.
Neophyte Tebukai, step forwards.
Far more slender than his superiors, Tebukai wore the light carapace and fatigues of a legionary scout. He was a youth of no more than 15, still acclimatizing to his transhuman physiology, with the air of someone not entirely comfortable in his own skin. His final surgery scars would still be pink across pale flesh, not yet truly tempered in the forges of war, his combat doctrines and weapon drills still requiring conscious thought in training. He saluted stiffly, though he said nothing and kept his gaze firmly on the chamber floor. Scrolling back to the top of the report, Adalas tapped one knuckle thoughtfully against the edge of the slate as he began to read again.
Sergeant Arcus led your training cohort on a mapping rotation, following the original request from Warsmith Dantioch, is that correct?
Yes, my lord.
What do you understand the purpose of this task to have been?
Tebakai still did not look up.
Security, lord.
Explain.
There were concerns. Concerns about how far the spaces under the mountain went down. Because normal ore specs won't work, no one knew, not really.
He paused, nervously clenching his jaw several times.
No one knows, I mean.
Adalas looked to Dantioch. The warsmith sighed and took a step back to settle onto the plain throne that had become a permanent fixture upon the tuning stage of late. The wooden frame creaked beneath the weight of his armor.
We used servitor drones to begin with. As part of my earliest investigations into the workings of the Pharos, I had the Mechanicum adepts fit them with ranging markers and send them down on prefigured exploration routes. Primary location Alpha is connected to a vast network of chambers descending ever deeper into the mountain, far beneath the surface and local sea level, in fact. The immediate tributaries feed into the Pharos system in five places. But below the Epsilon Cavern, it splits into dozens of separate passageways.
Dantioch gestured with his gauntlets, tracing large, rounded shapes in the air.
Some of the passages double back on themselves in loops or great spiraling walls. We lost almost all of the drones. At first, I supposed that their logic protocols were insufficient for the task at hand, but Magos Carantine was unwilling to volunteer any more advanced automata. If I am honest, at this point, my enthusiasm was directed rather more towards the potential uses of the device, rather than explaining the exact science behind it.
He paused, glancing back through the communications field to where another seated figure listened intently.
But as you know, after we managed to establish the two-way reciprocal contact with McCrag, it was decided that security measures should be stepped up if the Pharos were to be relied upon so heavily. There was agreement that if the extent of the network was still unknown, then it could not be effectively guarded without closing off everything beyond the range of our previous mapping expeditions. I made my thoughts known. Such action would almost certainly reduce the accuracy of the device, or stop it working altogether.
Adalas frowned. He had never been particularly skilled at hiding his frustration, even when under the scrutiny of his superiors. He chose his words carefully as he rechecked the details on the data slate one last time.
I wouldn't know anything about the workings of the Pharos, my lord. But if the warsmith had made it clear that he had simply lost more than 40 servitors under the mountain in a 5-month period, then Sergeant Arcus might not have been so quick to offer the use of one of my company's scout cohorts instead. And in that case, we would not be here now trying to establish what manner of threat lurks in the darkness beneath our very feet, preying upon any who stray too far into its domain.
There was a long silence. Adalas was content to let it remain, but Warsmith Dantioch looked to Tebakai once more.
It falls to you, then, Neophyte. Where your sergeant's report is lacking, we would hear your account of what happened to young Obadiah beneath Mount Pharos.
Tebakai let out a slow breath. His voice sounded small beneath the weight of their expectation.
By the Primarch's command, I will tell you all that I remember.
They had taken the conveyor, then followed the main arterial gantry to its end, and rappelled down to the fallen remains of the first temporary structure on the floor of the old Epsilon Cavern. It was not far, only 400 meters or so, They had all made the journey before. The soft, distant throb of the quantum pulse engines could be felt all around them, in the very rock itself, and their dropped magnesium flares marked out a rough circle amidst the debris. Wordlessly, they drew their bolt guns and paired off, exactly as they had been trained. Sergeant Arcus took the handheld ranging markers from Florian's open pack and passed them around, keeping one for himself, before gesturing for the neophytes to disperse. It was standard Legion protocol to use only battle sign when on field reconnaissance duties, though there had been some question whether or not that applied here. Still, Arcus had said, it was good practice. That was why the scout cohorts were allowed to range so far on the planet's surface, away from Sothopolis and even the Castellum. With the rest of the galaxy apparently crushed beneath the renegade Warmaster's boot, the Ultramarines needed fresh battle brothers like never before. Warriors that knew the 13th Legion's ways like the backs of their gauntlets. A greater war would come soon enough, a war of vengeance against the traitors who had taken Terra. His own thoughts far from such grave matters, Obadiah grinned at Tebakai as they picked their way around the edge of the cavern. They flipped on their harness lamps only when the last of the flares had burned out, and they could no longer hear the careful movements of the other scout teams heading away from them.
The sergeant's gone, so give me that ranging marker. I've been waiting weeks for my turn, and you lost our bet. Hand it over.
Tebakai grunted, thrusting the device into Obadiah's waiting hand.
Just don't break it. Arco gave it to me, and I've taken enough grief for your clumsiness these past weeks.
He pulled a tatty sheet of parchment from his belt pack and shone his lamp onto the hand-drawn map, tracing the path ahead.
Come on, move. We're supposed to be heading northwest today, then sort of north.
Obadiah looked up from the ranging marker's display.
You're not lost already, are you?
Shut up. You know how these tunnels are. Calibrate the rangefinder and let's go.
Shaking his head in amusement, Obadiah shouldered his bolt gun and aimed the marker at the nearest wall. A near invisible thread of pale green light played from the emitter, and the device's tinny voice spoke.
Range to target, 1.63 meters.
Tebakai checked the reading with a measuring line. Satisfied, the two of them trudged away and into the unknown depths beyond. After a goodly hour or so, Obadiah stopped, leaning against the smooth black wall of the tunnel and wiping his forehead on the back of his glove.
What is that you're always humming?
Tebakai wrinkled his nose.
What, this little ditty? I'm not sure. I think I've always known it, even before we joined the Legion. It's hard to recall much before that.
He pulled the drinking tube from his collar and drew a mouthful of tepid water.
What do you remember?
Obadiah gazed off into the blackness ahead.
Cabalisteeds. All I remember is Cabalisteeds.
What?
It's a biologist designation. Equus ferus? Cabalus. That's it. Horses in the low tongue. That was my birth family's trade. Someone, somewhere in Ultramar, must have decided at some point that Sotha needed horses.
What for?
Obadiah turned, narrowing his eyes against the glare from Tebakai's lamp.
How should I know? We had Cobblids for field work, and more spirited Caprizian breeds for riding. But I think they must all be gone now, anyway.
The horses?
No, my family. They would have been shipped off once Dantioch took over the mountain, I suppose. A shame. Seems to me like Sotha is just about the safest place in the galaxy to be right now.
They stood in silence for a moment, each trying to recall a time that was now lost to them forever. Layers of hypno-conditioning and psycho-indoctrination had scoured their mortal past and left them ready to be reforged in Gilliman's image. But although the future could hold nothing more for them than a life of unceasing battle and a glorious death at its end, No legionary neophyte ever felt anything as feeble as regret. Without realizing it, Tebukai began to murmur the half-remembered tune again, his subconscious straining to form words around the melody. Obadiah laughed.
I've never been one for music or poems. You should teach it to the herdsmen from the settlement. They love a good sing-song.
I'm not going near them, the filthy scrotters.
Mischief glinted in Tebukai's eye.
I always thought you had a bit of a whiff about you too. Now I know it's because you're a little stable boy.
He slung his bolt gun and cracked his knuckles, making it clear that another of their playful, brotherly scraps was certainly on the cards. Before Obadiah could respond, the mountain began to quake. The quantum heartbeat of the Pharos shifted, setting the glassy walls of the tunnel resonating with an almost painful thrum. Such an effect was commonplace whenever Dantioch or Captain Pollux tried to push the device too far. But this was different. This was more intense. Obadiah dropped the ranging marker, clamping his hands over his ears. The sound still beat in his chest nonetheless, as though he was screaming silently at the top of his lungs. From further away in the unseen reaches of the tunnel, they heard the clatter of falling rock on the smooth curve of the floor and the almost tectonic rumble of the planet's crust shifting ground. Tebukai fell to his knees, mouthing something that Obadiah couldn't make out. Gradually, the quake subsided. They both remained there, crouched and poised, ready for any aftershocks. None came. Reaching for his Voxlink, Tebukai cursed.
That damn fool Warsmith, he knows we're down here.
He clicked open a channel.
Calling Cohort Arcus 55.
Obadiah scuttled to his side, checking over the ranging marker for any damage.
What are you doing? We're not supposed to break Vox silence except in an emergency.
What would you call this?
We're more than 9 kilometers beneath the surface. We'll be buried alive if they try that again. Cohort Arcus 55, please acknowledge.
The link crackled. The channel was empty. Obadiah muttered under his breath, aiming the marker down the tunnel.
The Pharos beam could still be on. If so, then the Vox won't work anyway.
Range to target. 88.34 meters.
Tebukai raised a hand.
Shh! Turn that thing down.
What? Why?
Quiet!
They both held their breath. The link still returned nothing but a flat hiss. Except... his eyes wide, Tebukai looked up.
There. You hear that?
It was a faint binaric warble, only just audible at the very limits of the frequency. Obadiah frowned.
What is it?
It's an automated mechanicum cant. That's one of the lost servitor drones.
They followed the weak signal for at least another 2 kilometers, down and to the northwest, as far as Obadiah could make out with the ranging marker set against the almost nonsensical curve of the tunnel. They had strayed well off the edge of their map, and Tebukai had given up trying to record their route. His rough calculations suggested that they'd actually gone in a circle more than 3 times. There was a chill in the depths, a deep cold, the like of which they had never encountered, even beyond the great engine halls of Primary Location Ultra. As far as either of them could make out, no living human had ever set foot this deep beneath the mountain. Were they even beneath the mountain at all any longer?
It's like being inside a huge beast. Some huge, frozen beast of the void.
Be quiet.
I'm just saying, doesn't it feel like